Hi, so I'm Andre Batel, and I'm going to talk about a TCP extension that will turn on encryption by default. So what would it take to encrypt the vast majority of internet traffic? I think there's really three things we really need to get right. One is performance. It's got to be fast enough so we could turn it on everywhere, especially on servers. The other one is authentication. If you really care about security, you better know who you're talking to, so there's got to be some authentication going on. And we should be leveraging existing authentication mechanisms in place today, like certificates, passwords, cookies, or whatever's already out there for the application. And it's got to be compatible. It's got to work with legacy apps, and it's got to work on today's internet. So it's got to support NATs and other middle boxes. And there's no one solution out there that actually really nails these goals. And we think these goals are like the secret to success for ubiquitous transport, for ubiquitous encryption. So what does performance look like today? Well, depending on the case, in fact, the worst case, it could look pretty bad. So this is a graph showing a web server serving static content. And on the y-axis, we got the requests per seconds that are being served. And we have TCP and SSL. Again, this is the worst case. But SSL could be 82 times slower than TCP. So this could be worrying to some people. And the big problem is the cost of public key crypto. Well, it turns out if you carefully design your protocol, you could actually be only 3 times slower than TCP in the worst case. So there is clearly room for improvement today in performance. So what about authentication? Well, the way we do authentication today in practice is actually quite problematic. So let's say if I'm doing online banking, I would typically do an SSL connection, and that gives me two things. It encrypts my traffic and authenticates the server. It makes sure that I'm talking to bankofamerica.com. And then there's application layer authentication, like a password. I send a password to Bank of America so I could log in. And this application layer authentication is completely divorced from the transport layer or any authentication that happened below. In fact, the application is relying on the transport protocol to get it right. So in fact, if the SSL authentication fails for whatever reason, maybe the user mistyped the URL of Bank of America and ended up on some phishing website on a typo domain, that client authentication is actually going to harm you because you're probably going to just give out your password to the attacker. And this is not the only case where we got authentication wrong. There's a bunch of other cases where we could do better today. So imagine I'm just browsing on CNN.com and I have I share no password with CNN. It's just like an anonymous web browsing, and CNN doesn't have a certificate. Well, today you would get no security because you would just be using standard plain text TCP. So, an eavesdropper could just read your traffic. Well, it turns out that you could stop passive eavesdropping if you just do an RSA, key exchange and then encrypt your traffic and hope that there's no man in the middle. So there is room for improvement even in this case. It's not perfect, but we could do better than what we're doing today. The other case is if the server has a certificate. And in that case, like if I type in my credit card on Amazon.com, in that case, we get server authentication, and we're already doing that today. Another popular scenario is when I share a secret with a website, like a cookie, for example, but I'm not using SSL. So, for example, when I go onto Facebook, I send my cookie in clear text, and that logs me into Facebook. Well, in practice, that doesn't buy you much security because somebody could be eavesdropping that cookie and, logging in as me and messing up my Facebook page. But it turns out that with a pre-shared key secret, you could get mutual authentication and encrypt your traffic, but we're not doing that. And finally, the example that I showed on the previous slide is when you use a combination of certificates and shared secrets, like a password. But as I've shown in the earlier slide, the way we're doing it today is that both authentication mechanisms have to succeed to get mutual auth. So the certificate has to work out, and then your password has to work out. Well, it turns out that the password alone is sufficient to get mutual authentication if you do something like password authenticate a key exchange. So anyway, our goal is to go from this less than ideal security we have today to the best possible security we could get. That's what we're trying to do here. So encryption solutions today already also have problems with backwards compatibility, which was the third goal I mentioned. So there's generally two ways to do encryption, at the application layer, like SSL, and at the network layer, like IPsec. So at the application layer, it's nice because it works on all networks. You don't have any NAT issues, for example, because you're not changing the protocol stack. The problem is you have to modify applications. You have to use the OpenSSL API, and you might even have to modify the application protocol. How do I test whether the other end supports SSL or not? Do I issue a start TLS command? Will my protocol allow for these new commands? Is my protocol extensible? So it could be hard to adopt everywhere. The network layer is great because it will work with all applications. You don't have to modify any of the applications. But it could have issues with the network. It might not work with NATs. If I start encrypting the TCP header or macking it, how will NATs operate? And finally, you can't leverage user authentication at a network layer. So at a network layer, you typically have a key per host. But really, when we're authenticating, we don't want to authenticate machines. We want to authenticate users. There could be multiple users on that machine. We need a finer granularity. We need to tie authentication with a particular session. And what we really want is the best of both worlds. So we argue that the right place for encryption is actually at the transport layer. And that's our TCP Crypt protocol, a TCP option to add encryption. And we're going to deliver high performance, especially on servers. We're going to allow authentications to use whatever authentication mechanism they like and already is in place. And we want it to be backwards compatible. It's going to work with all TCP applications. It's going to work with NATs. And we'll work with all different authentication mechanisms. So a quick overview of what TCP actually is, a bit more detail. So we're just using TCP options, so we're not like changing the core TCP header in any incompatible way. Applications will still use the standard socket API, but we've added a new getSockOpt, which allows you to do authentication if you really care about security. And encryption is just applied automatically. You don't have to, you know, enable it or something. So how do we get the performance right? I've mentioned before that public key operations are expensive. But the good news is that depending on what operation you're doing, they're not equally expensive. So if you're using low exponent RSA, it turns out that the decrypt is really expensive, but the encrypt is really cheap. So if we design our protocol in such a way that the server does the cheap part, we get high server throughput. Well, it turns out that in SSL, for example, the server does the expensive bit. So just by, you know, switching the server and client role, we could get 36 times faster throughput than SSL. In SSL, the server has to do the decrypt because that's how the server authenticates itself. That's how the server proves it knows the private key. So if we switch the role in TCP Crypt, we lose that server authentication, but we get faster throughput. So how do we get authentication in TCP Crypt? Well, the basic idea is we've introduced this new abstraction called a session ID, which is a name for a connection. And so you just call getSockOpt on your TCP connection, and you get this new value, which doesn't have to be secret. This is your session ID. It's unique for every connection. And the basic idea is when you do a TCP crypt connection, if the session ID is equal on both ends, there was no man in the middle. If the application is doing some sort of authentication, if it includes the session ID in its authentication, it's also going to make sure that the connection is secure. And you could use password-based authentication or whatever you like. I'm going to show you an example of how you could use certificates. So if you already have SSL in place, we could leverage the SSL certificates for authentication and use TCP Crypt. And I'm going to show you how we can authenticate faster than SSL with an optimization we call batch signing. So here's how authentication would work with certificates. I connect to a server like Amazon, and Amazon is going to calculate session ID A. So now the client and Amazon somehow have to compare this session ID. Well, all the server does is sends a signed message to the client saying, hey, I got session ID A. The client computes its session ID and says, oh, yeah, A, it matches. If there were a man-in-the-middle attack, the session ID would be different, and the man-in-the-middle wouldn't be able to spoof the signature. So this works. Now I get a new connection with session ID B, and the server signs a new message saying, hey, I received session ID B. Here's the optimization. Let's say your server is under load, and it just received four parallel connections. Well, the naive way of handling this is to do four RSA signatures, right, one for each client. Instead, what we could do is we could just concatenate all the session IDs and sign a single message saying, hey, I received A, B, C, and D, and send that out to the clients. And we could do this because sessions IDs are not secret. It's one of our properties. So with one single RSA operations, we've just authenticated four clients. So we're amortizing the cost of RSA here. you can't really apply this optimization to SSL because of how the protocol is structured. Basically, in SSL, every client sends the encrypted session key or master key to the server, and this session key is random for every client. So the server has to do a decrypt, so a private key operation for every single client. It can't sort of batch decrypt or something. So let's talk about TCP crypt and how it actually works, how the key exchange works. So at a high level, the way it works is first we ask the other end, do you support TCP crypt? And the other end will hopefully say yes and will tell us, I support, for example, RSA. The client is just going to send the raw RSA public key over. The server is going to generate some session key, and it's going to send it back to the client encrypted with a public key. Now, notice that this public key is not authenticated in any way. We're not sending over a certificate. We're not signing it. That's left to the application, the authentication I just talked about before. So that's why, by default, a TCP crypt connection, if you don't authenticate, it's vulnerable to the man-in-the-middle attacks, because that private key is not authenticated. And we use ephemeral public keys, so like every 10 minutes the client could generate a new RSA key or something to give you some forward secrecy. Right, so how do we implement this? This is sort of a logical view into TCP in a compatible way. So let's look at the TCP handshake. So TCP connects with three messages, a SYN, a SYNACK, and an ACK. So the thing we've done is we've added a new TCP option called crypt. So TCP allows you to create new options. And this option takes a bunch of opcodes, and one of them is the hello opcode. So the hello message is how we probe if the other guy supports TCP crypt. If it doesn't, we're just going to get a SYNACK back, and we're going to fall back to regular TCP. So that's how we get our compatibility there. If the other end supports TCP crypt, then we do the full key exchange. So basically, the server is going to give us a list of public key ciphers and key sizes. We're going to give him a list of symmetric ciphers we support and a list of MACs we support. We're going to give him a nonce, and we're going to give him our public key. And the server is going to reply back our master key, which is an encrypted version of the server and client nonce. So there's a couple of things to note here. First of all, we've extended the TCP handshake from a three-way handshake to a four-way handshake. So we're going to be adding some latency here. Another thing to note is that the init1 and init2 messages are fairly large because they include public keys. Now, in TCP, you're only limited to 40 bytes of option space, and we can't fit a public key in those 40 bytes. So what we do is we encode those options as data, and we send the TCP option that signals to treat the data as options. And that data is invisible to the application. And we just do that at the very start of the connection. So this only happens for the init1 and the init2 messages. Okay, so we've exchanged the master key. From that, we could derive our encryption key and our MAC key, one for each direction of transmission. And that's how we also derive our session ID. Now, if you look carefully, the session ID includes a hash of the whole handshake. So in other words, if anybody messed with your handshake, if there was a man in the middle that sent his own public key, for example, the session ID would be different. So that's how we guarantee that if the session ID is the same, there is no man in the middle, because it means nobody messed with your handshake. Now, there's an optimization we do here called session caching, which is an optimization already present in SSL, so nothing new. And the idea is this. If I've talked to you in the past and I'm going to talk to you in the future, instead of doing a full key exchange and doing RSA, we could just derive our next key based on some old key we've shared. So that's much faster because we avoid the RSA cost. And also, it simplifies the handshake a lot. So when we're doing session caching, all I have to do is tell the server, hey, remember that session we've had in the past with session ID X? Let's resume that. And the server's going to say, OK, let's do that. And we require only two messages for that. And we can complete session caching within the three-way handshake of TCP. This is very low latency here. So this also highlights a benefit of using the transport layer. Because if you were at the application layer, you would have to do the three-way handshake of TCP first, like SSL, and then you would have to do your session key negotiation. So you would have to add extra round trip times. Instead, we could leverage the existing three-way handshake to do this. Great. So we've exchanged the key. How do we actually encrypt and MAC the data? Well, we just, in fact, encrypt and MAC the payload of TCP, and we MAC the TCP header. So we don't encrypt the TCP header, so we allow NATs to see the source and destination ports, for example. And we also don't MAC the source and destination ports, so we allow them to change, so MACs can operate because they change those fields. there's some additional fields that we MAC which are not present in the TCP header to prevent against some attacks. For example, we keep track of a 64-bit sequence number and ACK number, and we MAC those so we prevent replay attacks. If the 32-bit sequence numbers of TCP wraps, that's how we stop replay attacks because we're actually MACing a 64-bit version. And we MAC the whole length, the TCP length of the packet, so people can't truncate our packets. All right, so we've implemented this for Linux in the kernel, and that's our fast implementation. And then we have a user space implementation, which is a bit slower. And it's slower because it uses divert sockets, which is a mechanism of telling the kernel, hey, give this application all your packets. The application will fiddle with the packets and then send them out to the network. So there's multiple copies of the packet lying around. That's why it's a bit slower. But the good news is that you don't have to modify your kernel. It's actually portable. It runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac, and FreeBSD. So that's what we expect end users to be using. It's really easy to deploy. And we also have a drop-in replacement for OpenSSL, which attempts to do TCP crypt with batch signing. And if the other end doesn't support it, it will fall back to SSL. And the way this works, and we avoid double encrypting because we have this application supports bit in the TCP header, which probes if the other guy's stack at the application layer supports TCP crypt. So we could check if the other guy is running a sort of TCP crypt enhanced OpenSSL. And if it's not, we just go back to plain text TCP and just let SSL do its thing. All right, so let's talk about performance. There's really three things we care about. If I'm a web server, I want to know how fast I can accept client connections and serve them. So what's my accept rate, my connection rate? If I'm a client, I care about latency. How long will it take to display that website? And both for clients and server, I care about data throughput. How long will that download or upload take? And these performance numbers are on our Linux kernel implementation. So let's talk about connection rate throughput, how fast the web server could accept clients. So on the y-axis, I got connections per second, and I've got different protocols on the x-axis. So the TCP crypt server is faster than the SSL server because in TCP crypt, the server is doing the cheap RSA operation. In SSL, the server is doing the expensive RSA operation. And obviously, TCP is much faster. Now, recall that with TCP crypt and SSL, there are two cases. There's the cached case, which is doing no RSA. So in that case, the blue that's why the blue line is faster than the red line, because there's no RSA in the blue line. And so real traffic will be somewhere between the blue bar and the red bar. It will be a mix of new clients and recurring clients. But this is not a fair comparison with SSL, because SSL gives you server authentication by default. TCP crypt does not give you authentication by default. So what's the cost of authentication if we add authentication overhead to TCP crypt? I still have the same graph in terms of setup. I have connections per seconds on the y-axis. And the far left column is TCP crypt with no authentication for reference. And on the right columns, I'm adding authentication to see what the cost is, what the drop in performance is. If we have a shared secrets, we can authenticate really quickly. If we have certificates, we could authenticate quickly using our batch signing tricks. If we share only a weak password, things get slower because we have to use elliptic curve crypto to transform that weak password into a strong cryptographic secret. So we have to do stuff like PAKE, which is more expensive. But still, we're faster than SSL. So authentication comes at a low cost. So an end-to-end benchmark, this was the graph I showed at the beginning of the talk. So this is the web server serving static HTML files. And you could see that by adding a bit of application overhead, the gap between TCP and TCP crypt is already starting to narrow. So, you know, if the application is doing real work, we'd expect, hopefully, the overhead of TCP won't be that much bigger. Right, so what about latency? What have we done to it? So in the case where we're not caching connections, so in the case where we're doing RSA, that's the red line, we haven't improved much because I still need to wait for those 11 milliseconds of RSA because the client is doing that and the client has to wait for that. In the cached case, when there's no RSA involved, we've improved quite a bit, like more than two times faster. And the reason is because in TCP crypt, we can complete session caching within the three-way handshake. We don't have to wait for TCP to complete and then do session caching. Now, you might think, Why doesn't batch signing add latency? It's still 11 milliseconds if I'm doing batch signing with TCP crypt. There's actually two RSA operations that happen when we do that batch signing thing. There's one that happens at a TCP crypt layer just to negotiate the session key. And then there's another RSA operations that happens by the server to authenticate at the application layer to authenticate the connection. Now, we've designed a protocol in such a way that the server does one of the RSA operations and the client does the other RSA operation. So we're spreading the load and they can happen concurrently. When the server is busy doing its batch signing, all the clients are busy decrypting their TCP crypt session ID. And hopefully by the time they're done, the server's done batch signing and the connection is ready to go. So what about data throughput? So if I'm transferring a file, what's my bit rate? So I got bit rate on the y-axis, and I have different protocols on the x-axis. Both TCP crypt and SSL are using AES, so there's nothing new here. That's why, you know, we're just using standard ciphers. That's why they're both the same speed. The good news, though, is that now hardware is shipping with accelerated AES instructions on the Intel chips. With hardware-accelerated AES, we could do 8.8 gigabits, and that's quite a lot. So now is sort of like the right time to turn on encryption, because finally, hardware manufacturers have built-in AES support in hardware. So that's really good for us. Right, so how does TCP crypt fit with related work? Again, there's really two categories of related work. There's network layer solutions like IPsec and application layer solutions like SSL. At the network layer, it's hard to integrate with application layer authentication, right? At the network layer, all you know about is IP addresses, so you can authenticate hosts. It's harder to authenticate applications running on that on those hosts. You don't have that granularity. And you have all the NAT issues. Application layer, you know, SSL suffers from poor server-side performance, as I've shown, and it also requires changes to apps and protocols. Now, there's a bunch of work been done on improving SSL's performance, like SSL batching. That's different from our batching mechanism. So an RSA batch, basically you produce multiple signatures with slightly different public keys. Whereas what we're doing is with the same public key, all we're doing is producing one signature with more information. So it's just a different concept. And SSL rebalancing, which is pushing the expensive operation to the client, it doesn't leverage application layer authentication. You're stuck with, you know, using a PKI. You can't use passwords or cookies or other things. So if I've presented a TCP crypt, a protocol that will get you high performance, especially on servers, it will let authentications authenticate their connection and use whatever mechanism they like. It's incrementally deployable. It will work with your legacy app. It will fall back gracefully to TCP. It will work with NATs. And help us install, you know, encrypt the whole internet by installing TCP crypt. And I have set up a website there where you could just download our user space implementation and run it. And that website supports TCP crypt, so you can connect with TCP crypt and sort of get the TCP crypt version of the website. In fact, let me just risk it and try to show you our website. Let's see if I remember what the number is. Hopefully it's this. There you go. So I connected with TCP crypt now, so I'm getting red menus, and we have this Hall of Fame thing. And according to our Hall of Fame, 59% of visitors of this website use TCP crypt. We got 400 hits. That's probably just me clicking refresh all the time. And you can, you can enter the Hall of Fame. So I'm going to put use NixSec live demo. And you could make history by being one of the first TCP crypt users. My TCP crypt number is 9. It logged my session ID on the server. I can check my session ID running netstat on my client. So after the fact, I could go home and compare the session IDs to see if you guys were doing man-in-the-middle attacks or if the government is trying to spy on us or something. Today, we wouldn't even know. Now, at least we have a way of checking. That was my presentation. So I'm happy to take any questions.
So, really great idea, really great talk. I do have I've been pushing standard transport level encryption since the beginning of the internet, so finally glad to see somebody trying to make it happen. But I do, having thought about this for a long time, want to point out two things. One, piggybacking stuff on the SYNAC handshake is actually an idea that was there in the beginning, and there was a reason why stacks don't do that. And the reason is a DDoS attack that's well understood, which is that the SYN cache fills up. Or worse yet, if you pass on the data to the client, the client, you know, app may do things wrong. So it sounds like you're mainly filling up a SYN cache with more half-open connections, if you will. And that's a well-known DDoS threat. I'm just wondering if you've looked at the impact of that. You could say, well, it's worth it, and I would agree with that, but, you know, what do you think about that?
Right. Okay, so if I understand the question correctly, basically now we're adding new stuff to the SYN packet and potentially new state on the server. Well, the way this is implemented is when the server receives a SYN, all the kernel creates is something called a mini socket. And that mini socket, in this case, all it requires is one extra bit to just keep the state of whether the other guy wants to speak TCP crypt or not. So that's one reason why our SYN just includes that probe TCP and not, for example, a whole public key. Because if we were to send a public key in the SYN, we would have to cache that public key. Instead, all we do now is we cache a single bit, and once the client, you know, sends us our ACK, that's when we start doing the heavy computation. So the server state on the SYN is really cheap. That's a one bit.
I like your crypto here, and it's pretty good. But by doing this at the transport layer instead of using IPsec for this, you don't get protection for UDP or SCTP, et cetera. Yes. And I'm very puzzled by your claims, both that it is impossible to do individual user encryption using IPsec, because you can have as many session IDs between two hosts as you want. In fact, when we designed IPsec, the idea was that you would have individual user sessions, individual TCP sessions with their own SPIDs. We just like totally failed at like getting the APIs in place. Yeah. But if you're willing to add a socket option, it can talk about to IPsec, to IPsec at the IP layer as easily as it can talk to the TCP layer. Yeah. And protect everything. And the second thing that I was puzzled at was your claim that IPsec doesn't play with NAT when there are, you know, when there are perfectly good standards that are deployed that people use. In fact, you know, and when they're sitting in hotels behind NAT boxes to speak IPsec over NAT. So I'm a little bit puzzled by both of those claims.
Okay, I think there were really three parts to it. One of them was IPsec is more general; it will cover UDP, it will cover everything on top of IP, which is certainly true. We're restricted. All we do is TCP. Now, the reason we chose that is because we think TCP... So first of all, TCP is the majority of the internet traffic, apart from DNS, I guess. But also...
VoIP.
Yes. Okay, fine. We could also authenticate the server using passwords and stuff like that to make sure we're talking to the right server, even if DNS got compromised. In TCP, you could actually use the existing handshake to do your key negotiation. An IP is just a connectionless environment, so you would have to create some additional handshake yourself. Okay. The other issue that you mentioned, point number two, was there was one point about NATs.
Well, you also claimed that it was impossible to use.
Yes. Okay.
With per user stuff, which it isn't.
Application. Yes. Okay. So you also mentioned yourself that we didn't get the you didn't get the API right. So clearly there was at least something missing. There's this abstraction.
Oh yeah, but you've added an API change as well. So they could have been the same API change.
It could have been right, but I think we got it right with at least a session ID mechanism. Right. So there's that step missing. If you took it one step further, you would probably have come up with the same API. So there was something missing. The other problem is that from first principles, right, like IP, you are operating on an IP layer, so you would have to somehow track sessions. So you would need additional mechanisms to do that, which I guess you have in place. Now, when it comes to NATs, but the original design, you know, it fell down because of NATs. So you had to add a bunch of other tricks to get it to work with NATs.
But they're deployed.
Well, okay, I'll take, I think there's going to be a flame war between IPsec and TCP crypt, so maybe we should take it offline.
Okay, thanks. Damian Miller from Google. I think this is a great direction. Lots of people have sort of dashed themselves against the rock of implementing crypto extensions to TCP, and I hope that you can get yours up. You seem to be familiar with Adam Langley's obfuscated TCP proposal. Could you contrast your approach with his a little bit?
I'm sorry, it was kind of like low audio for me.
Sorry, can you hear me now? Can you hear me better now?
Yes. Right.
You mentioned Adam Langley.
Yes.
Are you familiar with his obfuscated TCP approach, and could you contrast yours with his a little bit?
Like one thing I didn't really talk about in TCP Crypt is I didn't really drive the point home is we protect we MAC the TCP header, for example. So if you want to protect against like RST attacks where I inject an RST packet, you wouldn't be able to do that, with like obfuscated TCP. So there's like additional protection we provide essentially.
Right.
That's one.
And what protection is there against downgrade attacks?
There's two cases. If the application authenticates, then you could detect that, right? Because you could detect if somebody messed with your handshake. If there's no authentication, so it's best effort, yes, you can downgrade. Which you could argue it's also a nice feature, because if I'm running a transparent proxy, I could downgrade my connections to get caching or something. So it really depends if you do authentication or not.
Right, and just the final point, there's lots of NAT devices and firewalls that modify TCP options, ADSL routers will commonly modify the MSS option to force TCP flows to fit in within an ADSL MTU. If you're macking that part of the header, then it's likely that you're going to break in a lot of consumer
devices.
Right,
so I really haven't talked too much about TCP options, but we don't MAC all. There's some TCP options that we don't MAC, like the timestamp one, because some people fuzz it, like some middle boxes for security reasons, and those we don't MAC. So in our protocol spec, you could actually see exactly which options we MAC and don't.
Cool, thanks.
Very quickly, please.
Right. Robert Watson, University of Cambridge. I was interested in the interaction with middle nodes, in particular middle nodes that resegment. The NIC is a middle node that resegments TCP in many cases because of TSO. In your paper, you said that basically TSO doesn't matter because if you have that much traffic, you're not going to be doing encryption anyway. But that seems incompatible with the argument that we're going to turn on encryption always because it's cheap and easy to do.
Right. So the question is about TCP,
segmentation offload, LRO, and other thing, and other middle nodes that will modify segmentations, but not the data stream.
Yeah. So in the middle box case, we're going to lose there. So in that percentage of traffic,
right. TSO doubles or triples performance.
Right.
On
so in TSO, so. The vision is that perhaps the NIC will be able to do TCP crypt TSO.
Right. So the other element of my question, sorry to keep going a little bit, is does your design allow stateless offload of crypt for TCP crypt?
We really haven't thought about hardware integration with TSO that much to be able to answer that. I would imagine I would have to give a MAC key to the NIC and something, and it would have
right.
to.
Since a lot of our performance these days comes from stateless offload, ideally not stateful offload, it's a good thing to consider. Anyway, it's really great work. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.